Feeling a little run down by the discourse in Rider fandom? Looking for something fresh to put that bounce in your step and a bee in your bonnet? Well, look no further than the Uncommon Cast RX. Active ingredients. Gomez Q.
I have been watching the progression of Sonic recolors and nudes masquerading as art.
Illustrator Clay.
Fire!
MC Pez. Don't you mean YMMV? Side effects may include hysteritis, show a fever, help a robotophobia, and an English slope. This is the cure for the Kamen Rider Show. Dose as needed. Anyway, yes, welcome everybody. Maybe that should be your drop.
They don't know what we're talking about. Okay.
Yes, no, they don't. So we're here to talk about Kamen Rider Kiva for the fourth time, and this will be, the 63rd, maybe, episode of Uncommon Cast RX. And, I didn't write a summary for this one. I'm looking at my notes right now, and all I see is in big letters, The Slump.
The Slump. I wonder how many people listening to this who've watched Kiva, or are watching it as we do this, agree with us on what happens at this point in the series. Because I love Kiva, and I know it goes up after this. Or it's already started going up. But, I mean, wow. Did you notice, Matt? Because Claire and I pretty much terrified you ahead of this, saying, watch out, episode 23. Boom!
Yeah, it was pretty awful. And honestly, I don't know if it's just because I've been so darn busy or what, but I think it's very possible that the slump has, and also your unwillingness to watch it. Correct me if I'm wrong, but there was some reticence on your part to undertake it?
Definitely.
Okay.
Yeah, we were very...
took me like 3 weeks.
We were very hesitant about actually watching these two episodes. We knew that it got better afterwards.
Kiva is one of the easiest watches, in my opinion, of all...
I reckon.
...of all Rider series, and I just didn't want to watch these because it's just such a downer.
But of course we have seen it before, so I mean, it'll be horses for courses. Different people will have a completely different experience.
Don't you mean YMMV?
Yes.
Sorry.
But, I mean, it's funny.
Hit up to date.
Yeah, definitely. It's funny to hear you say that it's basically put you off the series, though. Don't blame us, though.
No, well, I mean, I blame you a little.
Okay.
Honestly.
That's fine.
Just like, do we have to watch this? Yeah, I would like you to.
Yeah.
Really? Yes, please. But maybe to, like, my struggling with Gaim to catch up and... Mm. All that stuff has, made it, like, I can't wait to start watching again, but at the same time, maybe I'm just so tired of everything, like, life, which is good, but, you know, exhausting, that I just, like, don't want to move forward. But I'm glad we're talking about this today, because I think we need to get it over and done with for,
Purge.
All the good reasons. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's a good call.
Yeah.
So yeah, I did notice it, and it was bad, and it really upset me. Like, I think I emailed you, Todd, like 5 minutes into watching episode 24 or whatever, and I was kind of irate. And then I...
Why are they doing this?
Yeah, I was very upset, and then I hypothesized about things that didn't happen, and then I just... Yeah. I was mad, so... I don't really know. Well, let's just jump straight into it. I guess let's just say this. So, if you don't know, Jiro goes crazy and ties up...
Question mark?
And, it abducts Yuri after thinking that he killed Atoya and ties her up in the forest where they'll live together and he'll bring her food and she'll make him babies, I guess.
Yeah, and can I just say...
Yeah, please.
That makes him an attempted rapist.
And murderer.
Yes, it does.
Because if you have to tie someone up before they'll listen to your ideas about having babies, you're saying you're going to rape them.
Yeah.
If you're not giving someone the choice, you're going to rape them.
And we've been very clear about how much we liked Jiro as a character up until this point. This turn is so sudden.
And so it's unnecessary.
Completely unnecessary.
Didn't need to happen for the story to progress as it does.
I don't know if you guys agree, but my opinion is the only reason that this took place was to put Atoya and Yuri together as quickly as possible. I can't think of any other reason.
Yeah.
It's the most cliche, romantic movie.
All that needed to happen would be Yuri discovers that Jiro is actually a monster.
Yeah,
And then everyone's like, you're a monster, get away. And he's like, well, then.
Yeah, it would have been brilliant. It was just a little more subtlety, just a little more originality. But this crazy, like, 1930s romance, confrontation in the woods, madness. Absolute madness.
And I don't think that the show thinks, and I don't think the creative team thinks, oh, we've made him into an attempted rapist.
No.
Because we know that he has made a promise to Otoya in the future.
Mm.
So we know that he is still involved in the story somehow.
Yeah.
And you don't have a noble rapist.
No, you
just don't.
You don't.
So, I don't... They didn't need to do this, and because they have... The only thing involved in the situation asking me to take it seriously is me.
Yeah.
And that is really annoying because I don't want to. I don't want to dislike this character. But for my personal moral reasons, I sort of have to.
Yeah.
But I don't want to because the show isn't asking me to. And the show, in fact, is asking me to not because of how it's going to re-involve him.
It reminds me, this is definitely an example I know Fel will get, and Colton, and hopefully a few more listeners out there. I'm not really a manga or anime guy, but one of my favourite works of literature, period, is Hokuto no Ken, and especially the earlier stuff. The character Shin, particularly in the anime, they could have very easily changed it to make Shin a more overt sexual predator. He essentially kidnaps the hero's fiancé, which is what kicks off the whole story. But he never touches her, because in his stupid heart, he's genuinely in love with her. He just doesn't know what the hell he's doing, and obviously I'm not sticking up for assholes. I'm just explaining that he never actually... At the very end of his life, essentially, he tries to kiss her once, and she bites his lip and makes him bleed, and he's shocked and terrified and runs off. And that was in the 80s. So again, it's very strange to see something from 20 years down the line suddenly throw in this, we'll turn this otherwise sympathetic, noble, slightly bad character. He's a bad boy. We'll suddenly make him actually threaten to impregnate a woman. Which again, Shin never does that, as far as I remember, someone correct me. But yeah, If Juro's pursuit of Yuri had been one of misguided romance and he ultimately learns a lesson, fair enough. But he basically goes full animal. And the thing that concerns me is people will think, well, he's a werewolf, so it's justified.
Or anything. Like, he comes back and makes a promise and so it wasn't that bad.
But it is bad.
It is bad. It's not that the show itself suddenly becomes badly made. Mm-mm. It's that this non-acknowledgement of this awful thing messes me up so much that I just don't want to experience it
again.
And
it's in the middle of a perfectly fine
plot. It is. And when I think about Kiva, I don't think about this bit. I expunge it from my experience because it ruins it.
Mm.
If it was real life and I knew someone who I was fond of, and then he tied someone up and told her that she was going to carry his children.
Yeah.
That I would take seriously. Probably. And no matter how fond I was of this person, I would make it very clear that that was not acceptable.
Probably
and I would conceptualize the fact that he was, in fact, an attempted rapist. I don't want to have to go through the trouble of doing that about a fictional character. But they've really given me no choice.
Yeah.
And that
but as you say, they almost forget about it.
They do,
that's
and that just makes
thing.
It worse.
Mm. We've stunned Pez into silence.
It makes these episodes such a problem, and it's so annoying.
Yeah, I... But... Shall I?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I don't really know what to say. It really was just awful, and I think up to the point I am, I think we go up to episode 28, and he's still gone. He hasn't come back by then, has he, at all?
I don't think so.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, and it is this really weird send-off, and it's, you referred to it earlier being unnecessary, and I think that in the body of the episode, up until the point he, goes to kill Otoya in the scene before between the three of them, it was clear already that Yuri had made her choice. And there really is no reason for him. I mean, I know, Claire, you said that they could have just showed that he was the werewolf and she would have said no for sure, and stated it clearly, but I don't think that they even needed to go that far. I think it would have been fine for her to just clearly state her feelings, and then I don't know if there needed to be a confrontation or not, but he could have just gone away dejected. And maybe, I don't know, maybe even tried to talk her into something, and then, because she's Yuri and she's a strong person, you know, she would have said flatly, no, and I don't want, like, you're being disrespectful, or, like, listen to me, you fool, I choose this guy, and nothing you say or do can change that, which, wow, that bothers me, too, to think that she would have to say that, but I mean, if she got to that point and then he just went away, that would have been much better.
The great crime, the thematic crime here, is that it's not even gothic, man. Like, imagine how much more it would have been if they'd even just... It's a cliche, but at least it's a theme-appropriate, genre-appropriate cliche. If they'd had Jiro tell Yuri at the last minute, you know, I could make you.
No,
even that. But, I mean, that at least is a gothic thing. He's like, I could kill any man and make you my own.
But it would also be just as gothic for him to, like, set it out. I am the last werewolf. I want to make strong children.
Yeah,
do you want to do it?
Yeah.
because gothic fiction came from a time when that was fairly normal.
Yeah.
When a man would just put marriage to someone as a business proposal.
And both of these ideas
love
are...
Love can be involved, but doesn't have to be. That's just as gothic as any nasty, overbearing...
Yeah, and but both of those ideas are done. But at least they're not... I mean, whatever this was.
Yeah.
We're taking a positive... This is a series we'll enjoy, and it's crazy how much we dislike this one element. But it's a crazy element.
Yeah, I guess, let's move on, right?
Well, I mean, the crazy thing for me is that the rest of those episodes is fine. I don't know which even counts as the subplot, but the Bear Fangaya thing, that, fine, you know? I was watching that perfectly happy.
Yeah, and it was actually pretty impactful, I think.
Yeah. Well, again, it was another great example of what can... cure, quotation marks, fangai of their desires, because I know you were quite struck with how the guy who listened to the soothing music, Otoya's music, stopped him from having his, you know, vampiric thirst.
Right, Oomura.
Yeah, and in the same way, the bear fangai, you'll notice he's going to turn into his monstrous form, and his... dying wife or whatever she is at that point just puts her hand on his face and it stops him. It's very powerful. The episodes should have been more about that, about the choice of overcoming, the free will thing.
Yeah.
The fact that it contrasts that with Jiro completely giving in to his basest instincts, I think, well, it's your fault your race is dead. You deserve it. It should have been... working on both levels, it should have been showing how these monsters, how these inhuman characters, can be better than the sum of their parts, you know.
Yeah.
Even though the bear guy dies, he still shows at the last minute it's possible for them to be more than they are.
That's very true. Okay, let's see. I don't want to go too extensively through the notes that I have here, but I don't know, an odd thing about this slump is specifically, like, besides all the nasty, you know, rapey bits, are that, like, Yuri is cooking food for Otoya, and, you know, she does that as a sign of love, and I believe, Claire, you had a comment about that?
Yeah, I don't call that love. I call that a sign of commitment. I think that she is signaling her expectations of a relationship to him, rather than her... emotions.
We've made it clear we are not fans of
Otoya
and
Yuri. Yeah, I don't believe in Otoya and Yuri ATP. It doesn't...
We've also finished the series, so we're cheating. know, we no, knew the
even,
secrets.
Even at the time.
Yeah, yeah.
It never felt to me like a love relationship.
No.
We
said before we think Yuri can do better than either of them if she even has to.
Yeah, but I mean, even within this set of episodes,
right.
We see a fair bit of how she expects their relationship to go now that they are a couple.
Mm.
Like, she'll put her hand on his arm when they're together, which makes him uncomfortable. She'll buy him big presents, very ostentatious, which doesn't overtly make him uncomfortable, and he says he'll wear it forever. But he doesn't exactly look super joyful when she gives it to him. He looks a bit awkward. And just things like that. Like, she tries to cook something for him, and he says that it's plain.
Mm.
And you could say, oh, it's flirtation. It's not, though. it's not, though, is it?
It's just a bit mean.
Yeah, it's a weird... I'm going to talk about more of that stuff about Otoya later, but I don't think he's a nice man. He may be certain types of kind, but he has such high standards for other people's interactions with him. Like, he won't let Yuri get away with anything less than brilliant, and he won't pretend that it's better than it is.
He's a goof. The best thing that Otoya ever did was father Butter.
Yeah, but
that's his greatest contribution.
But I don't believe in that as an actual...
I'm not saying that absolves him.
No, I know, but a lot of people do put that forward as a thing in a story that if your child is all right, then that makes you all right.
No,
I'm not a fan of that.
Yeah,
right.
And it doesn't make a mass murderer who slaughtered children a good guy either, or a cool character, and you shouldn't have him tattooed on your chest. Sorry.
Where did we suddenly go there?
That was to Star Wars fans.
Oh!
I hate how Darth Vader is this, like, lauded thing.
Right.
Because he's a monster. Anyway, sorry.
Well, I mean, the interesting thing about Darth Vader is he's pretty heavily entrenched in Japanese culture. I don't know if George Lucas got it. He was obviously a big fan of samurai movies. But Vader sacrifices his life because he acknowledges that he has become evil. That is the moral of... I don't even like Star Wars, but you cannot argue that that is the moral of Star Wars. It is. That's why he sacrifices himself. Because he knows that it's the classic... It's harakiri. Because that is all he can do now to save face. Vader as hero, no thanks. But then, even Vader as anti-hero, I hate the concept of anti-hero because I think it's become completely distorted. I think it's a completely useless word. If your best definition of anti-hero is Shadow the Hedgehog, then jog on. I agree.
I call Otoya an anti-hero.
I agree with you, Matt. Otoya is much closer to an actual, the classical definition of an anti-hero, but even that is useless. He's just, you know, we've come a long way. Otoya is a jerk. And he might be able to do some good deeds and contribute to the narrative, but I wouldn't want to spend much time with this guy.
His good deeds are almost entirely grand gestures.
Oh, yeah.
He's not a day-to-day... Well, he's not a husband, is he?
No.
And that's what Yuri wants.
Apparently
like,
not.
She,
that's what I want.
When they get together, or even before they're together, I think, she decides she's going to make him a meal for his birthday.
Yeah.
That is wife behaviour.
Yeah.
That's what you do... long term.
Mm.
And I think that's a pretty clear indication that even if he makes her laugh and he's kind to her and so on, it's not going to work.
No, he's not cut out for it. I think we're meant to know that, though.
Yeah, I do think we're meant to
know that. And I think that's part of what makes Kiva a good story is that we know Yuri isn't going to end up with either of these guys. If we take all the clues and if we're sort of horribly honest with ourselves.
But even... Some series, you would know that so-and-so is not going to get the girl or whatever, but you'd want them to anyway.
Okay. No,
I don't.
No, I don't.
I think that if they break up, that's good.
Mm. We seem to sound terrible. I bet Matt thinks we're proper unromantic right now.
No. I can see, especially, the way he acted in the, you know, I don't know if it was canonical or not, but... it's true to him, I believe.
Yeah.
The way he acted in the movie, to low-rise jeans is just so, galling and disgusting. And, if I was there, I think if I was Otoya, I would have called him out on it more than just like, oh, dad, it's okay.
Well, the weird thing is, I know It almost, it just isn't addressed.
I mean Wataru, of course. Good.
Yeah. It isn't addressed in the show, and I think it's rarely addressed by the audience. Otoya is a father, and so I think maybe we inherently see him as being older than he really is. If I remember rightly, the character's only supposed to be around 22, 23.
23, I think,
yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, we'll get onto the movie later, I'm sure, but seeing him and Wataru interact is transcendentally awkward.
Yeah, he does act like a father, and you can see glimpses of what if he really was.
Mm.
Like, if he just had a... If he had a baby, would he be like that?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you can see, like, how he would be nice to a baby.
Yeah, he's just too much
for
it. He's a,
he doesn't deserve it.
No, he's... I mean, I get... You know, I think we all get the character. Matt, I don't know if you watched the Net movies before watching the film.
I did not.
Okay, well, we, like, have a habit of... We take in everything we possibly can. And, yeah, actually... Nago and Shiramine's relationship is more interesting in the Net movies. If you haven't watched the Net movies, folks out there, track them down, especially the one in which Shiramine confronts Nago with his past, with the secrets of his past, because it is very entertaining.
I think that must have been the final blow for my hatred for Nago.
Definitely. But, I mean, yeah, in the Net movies... Otoya, it's hard to think of the right phrase, but he essentially hits on Shizuka, which is...
She's a little girl.
Well, I mean, yeah,
a
it's
young
weird.
Teen.
Like, exactly. So, like, people her own age. If anyone should be hitting on her, it should at least be people her own age. So it's really strange to see... I mean, he says, you know, what is it? I think it's the Net movies. He says, call me in 10 years or whatever. And it's like, now I'm sure you think that's charming.
But it's actually quite creepy.
Yeah, that's not the kind of thing you do in real life.
Don't do that to anybody in real life.
Yeah.
Listener, I'm talking to you. Don't do it.
You dirty old listener. Yeah, so I mean, Otoya is too much of a clown for me. I like his moments of seriousness, and I wish there were more of them.
Austin Powers.
No, I totally agree. I totally agree with
that. He is Austin Powers. Like Austin Powers, he annoys me. But there are brief flashes of lucidity that I quite like.
Yeah.
I can't, maybe.
He's got some principles.
You're drunk. It's not right. There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Austin Powers is a better role model than Otoya. There you go. What ditch have I dug us into here?
Okay. Well, let's get out of it. So I assumed the food thing meant love as opposed to commitment because, you know, food is love. As the axiom goes, making food for and with others and then enjoying it in their company or serving it to them to feast upon their enjoyment of it is a good thing. Parents do it for kids, kids do it for parents, lovers do it for each other. They can anyway, and it is, as far as I know, a nice way to show affection and love.
No, I agree. And commitment is like an expression of love and a certain type of love, maybe. But like,
it did feel much more
like
bartering.
Parents do it for kids, and kids do it for parents. Like, that's not a romantic thing, is it?
No,
and you could say good friends do it for good friends.
Yeah. So is Yuri lying when she says she's in love with him?
No, I don't think she's lying. I think that she would and could marry him, but that's not the kind of marriage that I would want for me, it's not the kind of marriage that I want for her. It can work for some people, I'm pretty sure.
It just makes the whole thing sad.
It presumably has throughout history.
For me, it just makes the whole thing a bit tragic. I don't know if it did for you, Matt, if you were getting the lovey-doveys from this scene, but, like, I could tell, even the first time I watched the series, this wasn't going to end well.
No, I was upset, and, like, Claire, I don't know if you want to expand or clarify what you were saying or what you mean, but as I was watching it, I was upset to see, you know, you first get introduced to her cooking, and she denies that it's for him, and he assumes or pretends because he's a, you know, a self-charming jerk. Mm. You know, he assumes that she's cooking for him, of course, and... It unfortunately turns out that she is, and I was hoping that that wasn't the case, but not because I don't know, think that's, Not because I don't like the typical or standard. What would you say? Like the traditional understanding of how those sorts of things work out most of the time. It's not because I'm opposed to that at all. Like, in fact, I think for the most part, it's probably good. As long as everybody's nice to each other.
Yeah.
Of course. But I was upset by it because, like, I don't feel it's true for Yuri, I guess. Like, that's not who she is, really. And especially not the way she was behaving, the way she was acting. She had this different persona, and it wasn't true to, you know, Yuri the fighter and slayer of, Fengar.
I suppose I see what you mean. But, I just have a different opinion, I guess. Because I've said before, she's very Sailor Jupiter. Who, well, she's just the same. She really likes traditional...
For the audience out there, maybe.
She likes to cook, and she wants a boyfriend and to get married and have children, and also she's very ready to get in a fight, and she's big and strong, and she'll stand up for anyone, and she's a warrior.
The important thing is that the big and strong comes first, and then you're surprised to find she also has the traditional feminine traits.
Everybody has the way they'll act with everyone, and then the way they'll act at home. And I'm completely at home to the idea that Yuri is the kind of person who would want a very traditional, cozy home life.
Hmm.
But just the way that this meal for him is introduced, it basically is the introduction of she wants to be with him.
Mm-hmm.
It feels very much like allegory sex.
Right.
I feel like in an adult show, she would be giving him her virginity.
Wow.
Like, because people can have sex.
They can.
And not everybody thinks of sex as something that you do with only one person.
Mm-hmm.
But some people do. And I feel like Yuri is the kind of person who does not cook for anybody. I feel like her cooking for someone specifically like that is her saying, you are what I see in my future.
Yeah, you reckon Otoya...
And I don't want her to see him in her future because he's not going to be there.
You reckon Otoya would cook for a lot of ladies?
I do.
On the other hand.
I do.
Dip is late now. I mean, I'm with you. You're just making it even sadder for me.
I know. Well, it is sad.
Yeah.
And it's a little bit... Well, it is sad. Like, she should know. Because he hasn't given any indication that he is a one-woman man. Well, I mean, he might have a bit, but every other indication has been that he is definitely not.
Yeah.
And I think that she is being far too hasty. I don't think that makes it okay that he isn't, like, fully acknowledging what is coming at him. But I think that she should be looking at it a little more... even-handedly, I guess. But again, I blame him because he has been sneaking in whenever she is emotionally weak to be there for her and to turn that into,
I'm a man, you're
a woman, let's get on a date.
Yeah.
So he's wound her up in emotions and she wants to have a man for life, and so obviously she's going to look at him that way, and it's just not going to work.
Yeah, they do. I know, again, I say that it's easy to misinterpret their ages, but Otoya is too old to be surprised that Yuri now wants to do a wife on him.
Yeah.
So I have a little sympathy for the character, and I think Matt was especially experiencing the inverse proportion of Nago and Otoya, as your love for one wanes, the other waxes, you know?
I could definitely say that. I'm actually pretty mad right now. Thank you, Claire, for clearly elucidating and articulating everything that was going on.
That's what I'm here for.
And I have heard that, oh boy. What's the great, writer, head writer of the show, his name? I can't remember.
Inoue,
yes. Yeah, I've heard that for him, that he agrees that the food and the cooking and the sharing of a meal specifically between two characters who could be romantically involved is, you know, code for sex or allegory for it. I don't know, where that is, but I've heard that attributed to him, and, you know, okay. We should always be careful about those things.
It's a pretty classic archetype, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense.
So what does it mean then in the,
Oh, stop it.
No, I'm just, you know, in that movie.
Oh. Which one?
With Pham, where she picks spinach out of his teeth. Oh, what does that mean?
God, I mean, she's his mother. I can't stand that.
Yeah, I guess.
What part of sex is that?
This came out on the forums during Wizards Run, and because there were like four or five people always eating donuts together, some jackass said, does that mean all these people are allegorically having sex? No.
Yes, they're all munching on each other's holes.
Oh dear. Censorship.
Fool.
Yeah, I don't know if they were just trolling or if they're really that unsophisticated and immature.
Well, it's an unsophisticated show to have a flagrantly gay character with his donut cart.
That is true.
Give me a break.
Yeah.
Moving on.
Would it have only been one step lower if it had been a sausage cart?
Absolutely.
Basically.
Yeah, sausage and donut cart. Why do you sell such disparate food stuff? So, I don't know. I just happen to like both of these things.
Yeah.
Yeah, strange.
Frustrating. Anyway.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But we still like food. Kiba hasn't put us off food.
Love it.
Yeah, I guess, I don't know if I'm feeling, paternalistic or what, but I'm really upset now for Yuri and like, almost kind of what a fool she's being. Like, I don't mean to sound like this kind of jerk, which I might be, but I've seen women in my life constantly choose bad men over and over and over again and hurt themselves because of it.
It's not as simple as choosing a bad man,
yes,
though, is it?
Yes, bad men de-present themselves very well, often.
Yeah, that's the idea. They're both being idiots. Otoya is being an idiot because he's willfully manipulating someone. I mean, I don't even know if I'd call Yuri an idiot in this case, because she's definitely the victim in this situation.
She's not exactly well supported.
But I mean, it's again, we're talking about them like they're real people. The problem here is the writing. The problem is
the goodness here is the writing.
Yeah, well,
all of this is on purpose.
I know what you mean, yeah, but I mean, I also think that a lot of people might not see it that way, and at the end of the day, they are being shown a guy who likes to have fun, and a girl who wants to settle down, and doesn't that stink, and it's never been my bag at all.
I hope that it is clear enough in this that at least some people are rethinking. Like, they watch it and they think that, but then Yuri is pretty clearly drawn, and Otoya is pretty clearly drawn, and
I wonder how many people actually think about the romance relationships in these kind of shows. With Kiba, I don't know how you can help, because it has so much of it, you know. I mean, with something like Gaim, I can understand.
Complaint.
Really?
Yeah, for some reason.
What?
There's too much personal stuff.
What?
What would people rather see?
Fights.
Okay.
Well, if they want to see fights, I'll be happy to oblige them. The reason I would watch a foreign show aimed at 8-year-olds is because I want to know what kind of lessons they're being taught. And I don't know about our listeners, but if you have to teach a kid how to make friends and form strong relationships, or pretend they're fighting with a sword made of oranges, I think I'd choose the former.
Yeah, I would agree with you. And, you know, I think I might have to tack this on to the Gaim episode I just finished editing. But
okay.
I think the show is poisonous, and I don't think, like, I almost feel like petitioning against children continuing to watch it, because the lessons that it teaches are just that wrong, and that bad, and that misguided, and there's no, I started reading The Wizard of Oz, which I know is a strange way to transition out of that, but it's true. I started reading The Wonderful Wizard of Oz, Frank Albom's first novel in the series of 14. And in a foreword to it, he specifically states that he doesn't want anything bad to happen to his characters. And he doesn't want it to be like the Grimm fairy tales where something awful is always happening. And it's interesting, after the whole crew, Dorothy and the three guys she meets are together, or actually it's just before they meet the lion, the Tin Woodman, tells her that, nothing can happen to the three of them because he's made of tin and he's impervious to anything pretty much, except for rust. Scarecrow, can't be hurt. He can burn, but he can't be hurt. And Dorothy has the kiss of, you know, the good witch upon her, and therefore she's protected from any harm. So they'll just blithely go on their journey, and the only real concern that she has at all going through is having enough food. And I'm sure we're coming up to the part where they, you know, grab apples, if that can be trusted from the movie. Wow, I totally lost my point where I was going. I was talking about Gaim and how poisonous and bad it is.
Bad things happening to the characters.
Bad things happening to the characters. Oh, The Wizard of Oz, these novels were written, at least the first one, was written with the intention that nothing bad can happen to the characters. And it's always a safe place. And a lot of people don't like safe places, and they like risks to be taken and stakes to be high and there to be a cost to everything. And I agree that that is a good thing. However, Gaim almost takes it to an irresponsible place, the way it's written. There is nobody in the show reminding kids every episode mass genocide is wrong, or... No, really.
No, I'm with you.
And the fact that Takatora... Well, go ahead.
Well, I just think Gaim has that terrible... It's just that trend, isn't it? Every piece of fiction seems to want to end the world, and it just becomes meaningless. And Gaim especially plays its hand so quickly and vaguely. There's no actual drama surrounding it. It's just this idea of, oh, a bunch of people are going to die. It's desensitized. It's not even desensitizing. You know, like people complain about things in the 90s, desensitizing children to violence. Gaim itself is created by people who suffered from that desensitization. There's no context for anything that's going on. And yeah, I do think that's a dangerous thing to tell to kids, just to treat life so cheaply. And it's boring, and it's bad writing.
Yeah, it isn't entertaining, and it is, like, as you were saying that, my heart was breaking a little for Gena Rabucci and, like, what kind of person he must be, that he's... No, really, that he finds it acceptable to put forth these ethics to
just
children.
An insular one. Just an insular one. He's a, you know, classic fanfic writer. He needs to talk to more people about his work, I think, probably.
I hope that's it, and not that there is something real, truly broken within him that he can't see for himself the harm that could potentially come from continuing to go about the show, writing it, and, you know, with this trajectory and with nobody to say, hey... this isn't wise. I mean, Pinocchio, for crying out loud, had a anthropomorphized conscience. Actually, I don't even know if that's true. Damn it, Disney has ruined so many classic stories, and people never go back and look at them at the source material. I know you guys were talking with Nej about his Beauty and the Beast thing at school. And how it was actually based off of the Disney story.
Yes.
And fortunately, my daughter ended up going to see a ballet based on Beauty and the Beast, the original story.
All right.
Which was good. I was glad to hear that. I still don't quite understand how ballet is intelligible. I know there has to be something to it. And that's not, that's more my ignorance than a slam against ballet at all.
I've read the original Pinocchio. It's called Kikaider, isn't it?
Yeah, that's something else I want to talk to you.
The Jiminy Circuit?
Uh-huh, yeah, exactly. are you familiar with the original Pinocchio?
I'd say I'm pretty familiar with it.
I think I read it a long time ago.
I'm as familiar with it as I am the Disney one. I've never actually seen the Disney film,
it's horrible.
Know about
it's really
it.
Scary.
Is it?
I don't like it.
Is there a conscience that he has running around with him, talking to him?
In the original...
Yes.
God, you know I don't know. I'm not sure at all.
Well.
Do you know, Claire?
I feel like kind of, but it's meaner.
Okay, well, Gaim needs a conscience. Somebody needs to be running around in the show pointing out the things that are outright wrong.
The terrible thing is, I think that might be my... Now let that sink in.
That's...
She looks a bit worried. Can you imagine if the most Jiminy Cricket did was look a bit concerned and then walk off sadly?
No, and fall to his
knees.
Pinocchio,
doste, doste. Yeah.
Wow.
Ridiculous. So, yeah, tack this onto Gaim. Because, I mean, again, at least Kiva has Kibat.
Yes.
Who is the kindly old butler who can at least put things in perspective. And, you know, I don't think it's patronizing to a child audience to have a cool character like that giving mature context for things.
Mm.
He's a wacky little bat. He's not a boring old man, so it's fine.
And listener, if you've enjoyed this...
Hello.
Then please do come and find my soon-to-be-published writings on the work of Anthony Horowitz at womenwriteaboutcomics.com.
Oh, dear.
Thank you. You'll love it.
You would... Well, yeah, if you enjoy hating authors that don't have a conscience... Then you'll sympathise with Claire's writings on Master Horowitz.
No, it is totally relevant. They're basically the same thing.
No, I'm with you.
I will need to read that then.
Mm. Sure. I can send you my draft if you like.
Oh, please do.
Because it's taking ages and I could really do with some push.
I'm sorry, I should push you more. But no, I mean, do you think then Kiva puts good and bad into it, even though we've had this ridiculous bit of slump? Because I think there's a lot more... characters bouncing off each other, putting each other's crap into perspective than Gaim. Gaim just seems to be, it's the playground rather than the city, you know what I mean? It's such a tiny, insular part of the world it's created. It's just children messing around. And the crazy thing about Gaim is it was originally meant to be, look at these children messing around, how foolish they are. But they're still playing a game. It's the same. They may as well still be playing Pokemon like at the start.
Even with the worst bit of the slump, actually. The show doesn't realise how bad it is what Jiro's done, but it does realise he's done something a bit bad, and it does treat that somewhat seriously. Like, if it were a playground, essentially Jiro gets sent to timeout.
Yes, he's exiled.
And they don't do as much as they should, but they do at least do what they're aware that they should.
Mm. But in terms of consciousness, I mean, it doesn't even compare. Kiva, and I think... one thing the movie does really well is play up these particular characters, which is nice, because I'm generally not a fan of the movies because I think they do a poor job of representing the series, you know, their respective series. But Kiba has Shima, Akira, Megumi, Kengo, Shizuka, Kibat. It's really, it's pretty heavy on characters that exist almost entirely to show you how the central or acting character at the time has got stuff wrong. And I think that is something that Gaim needs.
Yeah, even...
Needed. I think it's too late. I think it needed it.
Yeah. Gaim deserves a merciful end. Or,
yeah.
Well, anyway. I think the, you know, Watcher doubting himself in the bathtub about fighting, about fighting the Fangire and what are they and all that stuff and, you know, and Kivat saying, that you have to remember what, you know, what you're here for and that you're protecting people is something that Kota could have used. And I mean, if Urobuchi's just gonna lift things directly from, other Heisei shows, then I think he needed to do some more lifting from Kiva because, some of the things that Kota is supposedly struggling with are, dealt with much better in much,
you
more
know,
succinct ways in this show.
Just when we were talking, when I was listening, I'd forgotten that Bando exists in Gaim. That is how minor a role he plays.
I can't believe they've done so poorly.
I'd forgotten that he existed. I thought he was going to turn out to be a major character. I thought he was going to turn out to be like an ex-Yggdrasil employee or some. Because, I mean, Akira in Kiva, he doesn't... You're never really told a lot about him. You're never, I don't think, explicitly told he's a member of the Blue Sky Party, but... Mm. You assume he is, because he's privy to all of their meetings. He's at least, like, their sponsor, or, you know, he owns the clubhouse. But I feel I know him so much better.
Well, there's that moment in the movie where Otoya notices him, and he's like, it's so good to see you again, you finally noticed me. And it's actually poignant.
Oh, very. Yeah. I think the actor does a brilliant job.
And that's ridiculous that's actually affecting.
It's so minor.
Because it doesn't... matter at all, technically, and those characters we haven't seen them specifically build a relationship. I don't think we've ever seen them alone together. It's just they exist in the same gang of friends, yeah. essentially.
Akira disapproves of Otoya because he disrespected his coffee once or something like that. You know, it's such minor stuff.
I think it's because he doesn't like coffee in general.
Yeah, even that gives you a little insight. You know, I think it's in the movie again. Akira says to his dog, Bullman, you know, oh, human relationships sure are complicated. Mm-hmm. And coming from that character specifically, as we've speculated on his lifestyle before, that really touched me.
Yeah.
And also, I think it's shows you the range again that the actor has got and that he's given, you know, the scenes he's given. The bit I'd forgotten about the movie parody bit where he imagines seeing Otoya off
so
from prison.
Funny.
Oh God, had me in stitches.
So funny.
I'd completely forgotten about that. And he does such a good job of making it. I just got finished telling you guys how much I'm not really like a comedy fan, but when a joke is funny, flipping heck. You know the bit we're talking about,
what
right,
you
Matt?
What do you mean is you like good comedy?
No, I don't quite remember.
In the movie, when Otoya is arrested.
Right.
Yeah, and when he gets out of prison, the first thing you see is a fantastical dream sort of sequence.
It cuts to the old Toei waves and the triangle.
That's it, yeah, because the old Toei logo, and it looks like an old, like, 60s drama, like kitchen sink drama. You see the prison gates
really
open,
grotty.
And Akira's there, the actor, he's dressed as a cop, and he pats Otoya on his shoulder and says, you know, good luck, and Otoya chokes back a tear, and it's all like gristly filmed, like it's not black and white, is it? But it's all grainy looking.
Yeah.
And then Otoya jumps in the way and wipes all the screen away and says, "That's not what really happened. You're filling in with your own fantasy." And Akira just like deadpan, just goes, "Become a good person," or something, like, "Be a good citizen."
And closes the door.
Yeah, and closes the door of the cafe.
Okay.
So Akira is outside the cafe that he owns.
But it completed what he would have been doing in the vision.
But it's
so
well directed. Yeah, it's well shot. It's funny. And it makes this mentor character so much more than just somebody to show you that this world is a real life living world with stuff going on in it.
It makes for genuine subtlety.
Yeah, and I think...
And the fact that it's him that has a moment that... The one that I mentioned where he says, "You finally noticed me, it's good to see you again."
Yeah.
Otoya is dead. And that... You know it's sad through Watari, because it's sad when someone's parent is dead.
Well, do we know Otoya's... Spoilers!
Well, he talked about being reincarnated. He thought he was reincarnated when he was in Watari's body.
Yeah, I guess so.
But it's not only sad because he's someone's dad, it's sad because he's a human.
Yeah.
And because their friendship link is so technically tenuous, the fact that he looks at him with such wistfulness really makes you realise people are real.
Yeah, the humans are so much more human, and like I go on about how much I love the Fangire setup, culture, whatever you want to call it. The monsters are more monstrous, the humans are more human. If you've got that, your Rider series is a success in my eyes.
Mm.
I don't think Gaim succeeds in either case, and that's a problem. But, I mean, hey, we can only compare things to Gaim, can't we?
Loads of people are dead in Gaim, and I do not care.
Exactly, yeah. But yeah. I think
well, you're not supposed
point.
To care. You're supposed to think it's really awesome that there's a DJ gun that you can scratch to shoot people.
Yeah, well, you know what? That sounds bad.
But when the division between human and monster is so... simultaneously clear and fuzzy, and you can sympathise with both sides and hate both sides. I think that's probably a big thing that makes me like different writer series. Akiva does it very well.
Yes, I think we should teach a class on Akiva.
We essentially are.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that's right. Well, hopefully people are listening and taking notes.
Yes, just be grateful you get it for free.
I was going to say, this doesn't feel like teaching. I get paid to teach. Come on. Okay. So, I mean, hey, we're getting more positive, though, because, you know, there is still... I think there's still definitely life in the series. I can remember really enjoying the direction it takes.
Yeah.
And I want to convince Matt that it's worth sticking with it.
Oh, no, I'm definitely in it. It's just... I'm just so tired. From life, you know.
Yeah.
But that's neither here nor there. I almost think, because of all we said, I kind of want to skip over my no fighting for love note. Should I? What do you think?
Go with your heart.
Yeah, just follow your instincts. If you got, if you can sum it up, if you feel you want, there's something very specific you want to say.
Yeah, you know what? Yeah, I'm gonna go ahead and say it. Okay. So, I'm talking about one of the strong points of this episode, I think, is that, fighting for love isn't a laudable thing. And you can see that when Yuri chastised Jiro for attacking Otoya, and she basically tells, them that she isn't an object. You know, to quote Jasmine, of course. good on her for calling out, both of them as idiots for attacking each other, thus making their relationship about themselves, not them, each and Yuri, which is the point of being a couple. And I don't know if that sort of thing is specifically a fault in men, where you can become so kind of focused on yourself in relation to, other people, I guess, or in the context of a relationship, that you're really not having a relationship with somebody. It's more about them being an object to you.
Yeah.
I think that's a mistake anybody can make.
Yeah. I think men are bad, though, in general.
Well, that's, yeah.
And women are generally better humans. No, I really do, but that might be
men,
a flaw.
Men are taught to be bad more often. That's the way I like to interpret it.
Yeah, I can see that.
We're given more weapons.
Well, honestly, I think that men are not taught to hide it.
Okay, that's interesting.
Because I think that girls are taught just as much to perform a relationship, not necessarily to actively, genuinely connect with someone.
Yeah.
Which is basically the same thing.
Mm.
Just from a different skill set.
Yeah, yeah.
That's interesting.
But yeah, I mean, this whole thing was very... very old-fashioned, wasn't it, really? I think it's probably the nicest way I can put it.
Yeah, I guess. I would say backwards and awful, but that's okay. A lot of things are. But the like, another aspect of that is I don't believe most women fantasize about two guys bashing each other over her, as they would claim it is, you know?
Well, I never have.
As a woman, yeah. I mean, I'm sure plenty of women, like, might glamorize the idea, but it's probably because they were taught it by men or by films or books created by men. I mean, it's explicitly more for the male character to gain in the situation.
To me, it sounds like a nightmare. Such a hassle.
Yeah, but it's just, yeah, it's very ugly. Romance with a capital R. I mean, the power relationship is all messed up, isn't it?
Yeah, there's a lot of possessives. And
yeah, what does the woman have to gain from this situation? Yaoi desu?
A stronger male to give her stronger offspring? I don't know.
I'm not buying it. I think it's more about the man beating another man and winning a woman, which is, like, messed up on a lot of levels. So, yeah. Leave that behind where it belongs.
But to, like, an animalistic level, that's like a double win, you know?
Oh, of course. Yes. Yes. So, for all the lions listening to this, great. Good show. Enjoy
Essentially
it.
Essentially homoerotic, though.
Oh, yeah. Oh, well, like I said, yeah. I mean, that's the great thing, is the only women I ever have known who like the idea of men fighting over them is then the two men start kissing.
Yeah.
And they watch.
Yeah.
So it's not really it's not really the classical sense, is it?
No, not at all.
Funny. We could probably do a whole podcast on that subject. but we won't.
Well, who knows? Who knows what the future might hold?
Yeah, I think we need some different voices if we were going
to... Yeah, you're probably right about
that. Too erotic.
let me see. I don't know. I'm skipping... I think we've... Maybe it's just because we've said so much bad about Gun. And we have a quota on how much bad we can say about something. I was a little bugged personally by the, you know, strong girl can't cook... trope joke thing in here.
Yeah, that was
dumb. Actually, I want to say this too. I'm going to say it. the reason it bothered me so much was because it undermined her femininity, almost saying that if she was a real woman, she could cook. The truth is she should be able to cook because she's a single orphan, and it's just much more economical to cook real food for yourself than it is to eat out every day, multiple times a day, as fun as that may be.
Yeah, but she works in a cafe.
That's true.
Yeah.
And Master does love her. He probably just gives her a little dish when he feeds the dog.
Nice lampshade, though.
yeah.
No, I hadn't considered the orphan.
I didn't like it because it's lazy.
Yeah,
and it doesn't fit with the rest of the way her character is written. It is that lazy, like, haha, look, she's good at boy stuff, but not girl stuff, so she's rubbish. But we've already seen that she's good at both.
Yeah, it was a very one-off joke.
Like, who cares?
Oh, sorry. Is Yuri's dad ever mentioned?
No.
Because, I mean, I don't... Yeah, bit of a hole there, eh? Oh, well.
Yeah, maybe he's just a loser.
Yeah, we claimed we were getting more positive, though, so...
Maybe it's Shima, and she just doesn't know it.
No, I'll tell you what is almost certainly the case there.
Okay.
Yuri's mum knew Shima and another man. She fell for the other man.
No.
Shima loved her.
That's always
the
how
other
it
man
happens.
Died or left and was very handsome. And so Shima has watched over Yuri for her whole life. I've seen animes.
Okay.
Right. But no, I hope that's not, because that's one of my most hated things.
That's my favourite character in Samurai Showdown.
Kill it.
Yeah, kill it. Ukyo, for all those out here.
No, that can't be the case. That can't be the case, because Yuri never fancied Shima, so.
Oh, yeah. Right, well, I've managed to divert us into fighting games again. I'll save that for another podcast. So, yes, Yuri's cooking. I think we can safely say that is the least Sailor Jupiter element of their character.
Yeah. But don't worry, I'll teach everybody how to make omurice.
Yeah!
Future Rider Cook, got a flat pan, because we don't have one at the moment, so you can't make the omelette parts. So.
You better be watching Rider Cook out there.
Gotta save the penny.
It's the only place that you get to see me move, and it's a thing of beauty.
It is.
Yeah, and go ahead and check out the Combinator G episode Rider Cook, because I didn't advertise that on the post for Combinator G. I'm sorry.
Please do.
I put a link to your one.
I'm sorry. How rude. You can edit though.
Kamen Rider G's beautiful European posh fancy whiny food. Go check it out.
If I ever forget to do something like that, you can just go ahead and edit my post. I give you permission.
Okay. He's gonna give us the key to the kingdom.
I've got moral permission, but I don't have actual technological.
We'll sort that out. We'll fix that in post.
Yeah.
Kiva.
Okay. Yeah. Let's see. Prisoner. No, I'm skipping that one. is that okay?
Yeah, we've covered a lot of this.
Yeah, we talked about it, so I don't want to.
Honestly, I think you'd be best off now just talking about how you like Emperor form.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Let's see, where was that? Oh, yeah. So, yeah. I'll go ahead and do that. Yeah,
okay.
Kiva Emperor is really cool. I don't know if you could have guessed this, but I do like the concept of knights, or at least knight armor. Like, it's actually one of my favorite things in fiction. Like, I want everybody to become a knight at some point if they can.
Like, I like it when he does this, because I can't do this stuff. Like, oh, this suit was so cool. Yeah.
It is so cool.
I like
cool.
The bats.
The bat wings? Yeah, they're awesome, aren't they?
I like when the bats will fly into places.
Well, again,
because that's so classic.
Well, it reminds me of Darkstalkers, a popular Capcom fighting game, which, Morrigan. Yeah, anyway. I like all the little bats making up his clothing. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
It's awesome. It's absolutely awesome.
Thematic.
It didn't.
Unlike Gaim. Sorry.
Wow.
Actually, no, I did have one other thing to say about Gaim.
Say it here. Say it here.
Okay. It's just saying how bad it is. Because in the movie, going all achronological, but in the movie, when all the Legend Augur are standing around listening to screams coming out of trumpet research,
yes.
I thought, that is a very good use of motif. Well done, show.
Music.
Because Kiva is essentially a music theme series, but it doesn't beat you over the head with it. It just organically incorporates it.
Yeah.
And you don't usually notice.
Nope.
And I think that's very good.
Yep.
And I think the guy was very bad.
Yes.
Because it doesn't do the same in the least.
No. Why are they locks?
Because Kota doesn't have any personal fruit.
No, you're right. You're completely right. It is bollocks. Yeah. Anyway. I'm with you.
So back to Kiva. Go ahead.
Well, yeah. The thing about Emperor Form bothers me, right? I bang on about how I love when the tech is story relevant or, you know, natural. And that's one of the things I actually really love about Deno. I think it's probably better than any Rider series integrates the form changing into the story and vice versa. Emperor Form, unfortunately, makes all the arms monsters redundant, doesn't it? Which is kind of an issue. I would have preferred if his ultimate form had somehow integrated a sword, a gun, a hammer, or just elements of those individual forms.
I can't believe you're saying that.
Well, but Tatslot just comes in and I don't hate Tatslot at all, but he comes in and takes over completely, doesn't he?
Yeah.
He's introduced. The room turns
Tea
red.
Go here.
The room turns red, and like, I don't know, like Ricky's like terrified, like, oh, he's awakened, and oh no, who's it going to be? Mew, mew! It's this little dragon guy. And you never, I don't think we'll ever see Dogger form, Basher form, or Garou form again.
He still
and they hang out in the castle, but...
He still has the sword, doesn't he?
No, he gets a new sword.
when he's Emperor form.
No.
Like fruit machines.
I suppose he can do he occasionally will do the rocket sword, won't he? And I think he does the rocket hammer at one point. But
oh, yeah, he does that thing.
It makes Jiro and Ramon and Ricky a little surplus to requirements, and I think that's a shame.
Yeah, well, I feel kind of like, I don't know if somebody spoiled me and said, like, Kiva Emperor is the true form of Kiva. Is that true? Is that BS?
No, they say it in the show.
Okay.
But I mean, you can interpret it what they mean.
Mean.
Yeah, you can interpret what they mean by true form.
Yeah, I don't know what it means. I suspect when the whole Fangire hood of Wataru is discussed in the show, that will be slightly more addressed. Like, there might be clues to that.
If Emperor form is Kiva's true form, it must only be this Kiva's true form. Because if it was his true form, it would necessitate Tatslot having been around 800 years ago. And if he was, he wouldn't have little inscriptions on him that equate to a werewolf, a Frankenstein, and a merman who weren't around yet.
How can you even have a
bish,
true
bash,
form
bosh.
That involves somebody else getting on you?
Done. Yeah, silly. Exactly. Nonsense. Sorted.
All right, fine.
You're welcome.
It is kind of funny that he, like, I don't know, does away with the usefulness of these guys who have been, you know, who made promises to Otoya. Like, did Tatsulot make a promise to Otoya too? I don't think so.
What about Bron, the head that combines with the bike? Where did he come into it? We never flipping.
He also made a promise with Otoya.
Yeah, it was just a very silent one.
Yeah. Maybe, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe Maya has something to do with those guys, but.
Maya
like
does sound like Moai, and Bron is a...
Shush.
Huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, the form itself is cool, but I see the point that you have, that it should have come from, you know, these three guys. So, that is a little unfortunate, but the suit looks freaking awesome. It's gold. It's gold, and he has a crimson cape.
The cape is pretty good.
And he's all, like, pointy and airy. He almost looks like a matador, a little bit.
It takes his base colours, doesn't it, and accentuates them, swaps them around a little, maybe. Can't really think of it off the top
of
my head.
And for once, I've actually used a fabric that doesn't look
the
awful.
The cape doesn't look bad, yeah, that's true. That's a good
point.
It's got
actual give to it.
Yeah.
It moves.
Yeah.
And it's attached to the arms, which helps a hell of a lot in action sequences.
Mm. Yeah. I think my biggest complaint would be that his thing is fever, you know, for the
batty
kick.
Yeah, what's that about?
Yeah, like, it's a stupid thing just, like, thrown in there, like, hey, this fever, you know, it's an English word, it means this.
English word. Cool English word.
It means, like, when you get really hot and, like, he's, you know, burning with whatever. So, like, can we do this? And, like, let me see. Wake up fever. It sounds okay. Yeah, go ahead.
If they established that Tatslot was, like, born or built in the 70s and was proper into disco, I could buy it. But that will never come up. Sorry.
No, that is the reference. Disco music, disco fever. Come on, that's gotta be it. Anyway, it's kinda dumb. Like, there are things dumb about it, but I like it overall, and I just, I forgive the suit because of how awesome it looks. Complaining a little bit more about him, I think he's an unfortunate necessity. The subs make his dialogue hard to read. I'm sorry.
Is that TV Nihon?
Yeah, I don't like complaining about TV Nihon, but like when it's hard
huge
to read, it's a little difficult.
Like
I just get his voice without the content, and it's a hurdle for me because I don't really know what he's saying 100% of the time. But I hear his little voice like this.
He rarely says anything of consequence, but I like sometimes his interactions with Kibat. I like his name. I like that he's an explicit contrast to Kibat's personality. Because I like Kibat having a kohai. I like the scene where Kibat dunks him in the bath. Because Kibet's having fun, and Tatslot blatantly isn't. And it's like all of his sort of luster and candor that he has when he's flying around going, meow, meow, suddenly falls apart, and he's actually terrified. And it was very, I don't know, it was genuine to me. And in the movie, there's a scene where Tatslot, frees Kibat from the Mummy Legend Orga's bandages, and Kibat is obviously quite miffed at having to be saved by this punk. So I don't know, I think they work well together.
I like the shape.
Yeah.
Of Tatslot. Yes. Because he's a bit like a horsefly, and also his head is sort of the shape of a horse head. And that is very satisfying to me as a visual thinker. A horsefly should have a horse head. There it is. That's good.
I'm with you. I think we've mentioned before about how Kibat is the kind of toy that would look nice on display, because he looks cool. He's well designed and he has character, and I think Tatslot's up there with him.
Yeah, and I don't know if I'd want to have him at my house, but sure, Kibat. Anyway, so Mio, to me, is approaching the status of a tragic character, and of course, time will tell.
I don't know what he's talking about.
You don't know what I'm talking about.
What's this man
tell us what you mean.
I don't understand.
She doesn't want to be this person, this Fengire who has to mete out punishment upon the other Fengire, and she, found this guy she likes and who can relate to her, because it's all about her. And she seems to want to, I mean, she definitely, it almost seemed like she wasn't fully awakened to her personage as a Fengire, or to her Fengirehood, which doesn't really make sense now that I'm saying that out loud, but
does it not to you? It did to me, because I mean, we've seen that they can sort of be cured of it by things that they like. So it makes sense to me that it would also take a while to grow in the first place.
I suppose that's true. I just kind of imagined that Fengire were born to other Fengire, and I don't know, you're raising to eat people's life energy and stuff.
Oh, they are, but I mean, yeah.
We haven't seen their parents though, have we?
No, we haven't.
Nature versus nurture.
Yeah, and we haven't seen how the teaching goes from parent to child, so. It's kind of. Go ahead.
Her parentage is never revealed, but when there's a bit more, when we get a bit more Mio action, I will get onto something that really annoys me about her, in regards to parentage, because I think there's some laziness in something that comes out later with Mio. Although I do actually like the role she occupies in the plot. I think she's a very important character, and I really enjoy her scenes with Wataru. There's something about her later on which I don't like, because I think it's confusing, and I think it confuses the Fangaia mythology. But you'll have to wait for her to make a little change before you see it.
Okay, that'll be interesting to see, I guess. But yeah, I'm not saying I sympathize with her, or I think she's great or anything, but it just seems like she's really, like, she has this responsibility and she's reluctant to take it on because of the costs to her. Ironically, it's kind of, self-centered, and she's ignoring the costs that will, be incurred by the people who she harms. However, her selfishly wanting to abstain from taking on this role is preserving to some extent the lives of those people, although
she is making the right choice in capital letters, you know.
Yeah, I mean, but then again, should she pull a bizarro gaim and actually join and become queen, take on her mantle, her crown, and then not do it? Should she tear it apart from in the inside? I don't know, maybe. But anyway, we don't need to belabor that. So if you want to move on, that's fine. What would I do?
Bishop's creepy, you know, or like. You about to immediately resist that guy? I don't know.
yes, he is creepy. I don't know what I would do.
I like how she's written. I don't like her very much, but I do like how she's written, because I really appreciate that she has a very definite sense of self. She's not confident or anything, but she is.
Yeah, small and
unbending.
Wrapped up. It may be.
Yeah, she doesn't use it. She doesn't particularly use it in a noble fashion, but she does have an idea that she has rights as a person.
Mm-hmm.
And especially in a shy girl character, that's really good to see, because everybody does. But a lot of people ignore that about a lot of people, especially shy people, and especially girls, and especially shy girls. And it's just nice to see a girl who says she's got rights.
Mm. And disagrees with the creepy loser in glasses.
Yeah, that's something I really like about Hiyori in Kabuto. I really appreciate that, again, she is a very introverted person. She fears the public, but she's not moe about it. She's got like an iron core. She doesn't forgive. She's quite belligerent.
Mm.
And I really, really appreciate that that Kamen Rider has a decent range of strong, shy girls.
Yeah. Something that made me think about Mio in a slightly different way, I don't know if you guys picked up on this, but one episode, I can't actually remember specifically which one it was, maybe been 24 or 25, I don't know, but around the mid-20s, the opening, everyone, did you know, from Kibat, is about the queen piece in chess, and how it is the most powerful piece, but not actually the most valuable. He doesn't put it quite in those terms, but he lays it out there. He says that it's the most powerful, and then goes on to talk, I think, I don't know.
About how the king is better?
The king is the piece you want to destroy, but the queen actually is, bar none, the most powerful piece. And I think, I don't know, I think, well, they must have put that in for a reason. Mm. And how you interpret power is up to you, but it made me think about Mio's place, especially in her interactions with Bishop. Bishop doesn't value her at all. And I think there's something to be said for a contrast between the way Bishop and Wataru interact with Mio, and obvious as it might be. And hopefully we'll see Mio being more confident around Wataru in one way, and being more confident against Bishop in another way, and generally growing as a character. I don't really remember, but I do like the idea of bigging up the fact that a queen is powerful, but not relatively valuable.
I now want to look into the history of chess and see why those things are the way they are.
Don't go crazy with it. Start applying it to Kiva. Like, oh, have you ever noticed? It's like the fruit bowl stuff in Gaim, you know, plaguing Tumblr. Oh, have you ever noticed how Bishop only ever walks diagonally? It's deep.
No, I meant
it's deep, man.
More for my own edification. It's a curiosity that chess, which I assume is a really old game, I actually don't know.
Pretty old.
But that the queen is the most powerful, even though the king is the most valuable.
Yeah, the queen has the queen has the best range of movement, essentially.
Oh, I'm familiar with that. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, and that's...
Thank you for underestimating me.
A listener may not be.
Oh, yeah, I guess that's true.
What's that?
A listener may not be.
That's true.
So that's laid out just in case. Yeah. In chess, a king can move one space at a time, no more.
In any direction.
In any direction. But if the king is taken or about to be taken, if the king is unable to move without endangering himself, the game is over. The queen can move any number of squares in any direction, but if she is taken, the game remains playable.
Yeah, so technically she's not valuable, but she is by virtue of the fact she can do basically anything.
Plus, I think this is an official rule. It may just be like a school rule or something, but as I was taught, if a pawn makes it fully to the other side of the board, it can be swapped for a queen.
Really?
Which... I mean, Henry VIII had 6 wives. You can start out a pawn, and
graduate,
if you are political enough, you can attain the power of...
Graduate pawn to a king. Well, that reminds me of wanting to talk about Blade. We'll get onto that when we do a Blade podcast, the idea of what a queen represents. But, for all you folks out there, it is there in the game of chess. The queen is a piece that you want to keep around. She's a beast. And she's unique. That's the important thing as well. Like, bishops, you actually have two bishops, two rooks, which again is something, although I like how the Fangara set up, I wish they'd gone a bit further with the whole chess analogy. I mean, they call them the checkmate four, and that implies that you need a rook and a bishop and a queen and a king to get checkmate, and you don't, and it's all a bit confusing.
Well, honestly, it implies that there should be the same level of organisation in opposition to them, which there is not.
Yeah, I suppose so, yeah. But I mean, basically, yes, the king and the queen are the only unique pieces. So they're definitely, obviously, maybe, at the top.
If not for the fact that the Fangire have somehow the checkmate four as part of their nature, kind of like the Shuffle Alliance, I would like to think that at some point in history, a Fangire said, man, chess is a really cool game. I know. We should have our top people be named after chess stuff.
Let's not only base our culture around it, but make it genetically part of our culture.
Oh my gosh, that's what happened. You're right.
How do you do that?
They probably did do that, and then they did some sort of ritual that magically imbued them all with.
Makes tattoos appear on your hand and all that. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, alright. Well, whatever. Alright, let's move on. Man, that's really interesting. I really do want to look into the history of chess now. We should do a show just about chess. And I don't mean an episode of the show, just like a whole show. Yeah, a whole series just about chess and how awesome it is.
Oh, wow.
Sorry.
Chess is fun.
I got a great idea. Chess the movie. And you can, like, have transforming chess pieces and spaceships aliens that are shaped like chess. It'd be awesome.
Actually, Sam, if you're listening to this, I have a mate who, when he and I discovered basically Kamen Rider together many years ago, and he, being more creative than me at the time, I'm catching him up now, I think, he came up with his own Rider concept, and it was chess. It wasn't chess themed, actually, sorry. It was based on something maybe like the original Indian version of chess, and that just occurred to me. So there you go. Chess, Kamen Rider, Sam already thought of it. But no, I mean, God, yeah, there's plenty to talk about.
Right. Okay, so episodes 25 and 26, basically, this is the rundown for it. Amnesia and The Miracle of Love are both really fanciful, but well done and fitting for the tone of the overall story. A few times while watching this, I made guesses as to how it would end and was shocked by how things reverted to how they were before. The fakeouts are compelling, if a little disappointing.
Yeah, I think we warned you there would be a lot of little bumps in this particular road. But I probably would have been disappointed if Otoya hadn't found the ring. Fanciful as it was. I did want him to find it. Because, I mean, I don't know if it was because everything else in their relationship was going so badly. But I still want to believe that he can keep his word. Even though he's a jackass, I want to believe that he can still do this magic stuff despite being ostensibly an ordinary human.
Well, if he can't, he's just a broken mess.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I wanted to... I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure they could have done something with it if he hadn't found it. It could have taken his character in an entirely new direction, but I don't know if that's what I wanted.
It wouldn't have made... For me, it's not so much about him as it is about the world of Kiva.
Okay.
It needs to be the kind of place where that can happen.
Yeah. Yeah, agreed.
I'm quite angry at Otoya.
Oh.
In this section.
Mm-hmm.
As I recall, the first time it does abate by the end, but I just think he's such a turd. He is. I hate his stupid.
I'm sorry.
Fake
weren't romance. We just talking to someone the other day about how our podcast we try to sort of encourage, critical thinking and.
I am being critical.
Wider reading, maybe, and he's a turd though. Please, no, where's your citation?
He's. Got no nutrients.
Right, got
and
you.
He's all...
I'm with you. He's been
recycled,
digested.
Recycled, social...
Clichés.
Yes.
Yeah. Go for it.
No, but just because you have supernatural luck with rings, which he does because he found Yuri's ring and also he managed to remove Yuri's ring before when she was engaged to Jiro, or almost engaged
That's
to Jiro.
True, yeah.
Just because you can do that, it doesn't entitle you to use those facts as proof that you are someone's destiny. That's not fair. Like, people in real life have enough trouble with disentangling real relationships from television relationships. That people do mistake cliches for genuine emotion.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not fair to do to someone. And Yuri has already, we've talked a lot of times about how she's vulnerable and how he moves in every time. Just enough to make her comfortable, but not holding back enough to actually allow her real choice. There's too much of him in her. He's all in her face all the time, and she doesn't have time to have a rest and really think about her feelings. And when someone can make a grand promise and go to somewhere where you already have complex emotions and find a ring, it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean anything more than that is what happened. I just...
It presumably doesn't help either that he does the classic, I mean, he doesn't do it the sort of one-off, but he makes it just a natural part of his character.
Yeah.
You know when the lady walks in on the man and another lady is kissing him? Oh, she's doing a kiss on me.
Yes.
And there was nothing I could do.
Yes.
I was powerless. Atoya does that all the time with Maya. I don't know what she's doing yet. She followed me. He doesn't know that she's a friggin' monster.
Yeah.
But he doesn't at all make it clear, no, Yuri, don't. You're the
one. I wouldn't have such a problem.
Yeah,
I don't mind grand gestures and grand romance being part of a character's relationship.
Good.
You know that.
Yeah.
But it's just been made so obvious by the writing that they are not compatible in what they want from a relationship, because Atoya wants right now and Yuri wants Mr. Right, to use the old thing backwards.
Mm-hmm.
But he's still doing the things that Mr. Right does in the stories. And he knows he isn't Mr. Right, and he knows he never will be. And he knows that what he wants from her is not fair, because
it's not part
of her comprehension.
That you notice that, and hopefully a lot of other people notice it, hopefully kids in some small way even noticed it.
Yeah.
Because I think Kiva is great as a story about the necessity of moving on.
Yes. I'm not criticising this as writing, I'm criticising the character as a person.
Oh, okay, right.
I think it's good writing.
Sin. Okay.
No, it's not.
Well, we talk about it, though, don't we? How we shouldn't lend them any credit.
No, I don't. I say that we can do that, but we should also acknowledge that it is written.
Right, okay.
I think that both are useful and valuable to talk about. I don't think you can talk about one without the other, really, because if it's just about what someone's written, you may as well write an essay.
Right, okay.
I think that Atoya is a big, horrible... bad man.
Yeah.
And I think that he is being made that way on purpose, and I'm glad, because...
Isn't it nice?
It's relaxing to see.
That we know, and maybe in some way Matt knows, but we know that Yuri not only moves on, but moves on well. And doesn't sort of live out the rest of her existence as some frail, Miss Havisham thing going on. Because I assume Matt gets that impression from the strength that she shows otherwise, but
who's Megumi's father?
That's what I want to know. It was so bizarre to see, the Megumi eye view of Yuri. hey, help me clean, and, lifting her up as a baby and things like that. I don't remember what episode that fell in, but yeah, I get a sense that she moves on. Isn't the movie?
I think it's right after the movie.
Oh, okay.
It's 29:30.
Yeah, because I remember that, but I don't remember it from this watch.
Oh, okay. Whoops.
Yes. Touching that.
Well, I think it's 29:30 for you folks.
I'll ignore that then. But it was cool to see, she moves on from these fools, who, it was funny, Claire. I mean, you said it before, and you've seen it, so you know. And maybe you knew early on, but, I finally accepted, neither of these guys are right for her, obviously. She really needs to move on to somebody else, or not necessarily move on, but just these aren't the right guys for her, neither of them. So, it's cool to see that she does meet, you know, some nice chap and whatever.
And I think I would have a poorer opinion of the writing of this if Maya wasn't a fact. If Maya wasn't written as Maya is, then I would just think this guy is being written to be this impressive, charming man.
No,
but he's actually horrible.
Yeah, I said that when Maya was introduced.
When Maya is there,
she
is so far ahead of him, treating him how he treats other people.
Exactly.
It's amazing.
I think it's really interesting.
Maya
to watch.
Is a boss.
I like the. I said that when she was first introduced. The effect that Maya has on Otoe was completely necessary.
Yeah.
For the character as a person and for the plot to progress.
And for the viewing experience, he would be insufferable if there was nothing to stop him.
Yeah, you want to see that happen. You know, it's Narcissus 2, the sequel. Like, how come... It's a relatively original idea, especially in this genre. And I think it's... Well, I know it pays off. So look forward to it.
The only thing I'd have to say to that is, like, because of her position and station and who she is, doesn't she kind of deserve that position? Whereas he just, like, assumes it wrongly?
Yeah, I guess. She at least has been raised to be a ruler. Whereas we don't really know anything about.
She's also far more honest.
Yeah.
She has the same high standards for other people. She does require a lot
but
of other people's interaction with her, but
pretend.
She doesn't actually float them anything. She doesn't. No. She doesn't go, "Oh, Nago, you sweet little man, I think that you are my fated man."
Well, she doesn't even pretend to understand humans.
No.
As a species.
She is. He is a phony, a disingenuous phony, but she is just honestly that much of a classy dame.
Yeah, I do quite like Maya as a character, I think, which surprised me on a first watch and a rewatch. Because, I mean, look at her, she's sabotaging their relationship. Does that strike a chord with you, Matt, as a man who has espoused sort of classical, traditional relationship views in the past?
Yeah.
Do you hate Maya?
No. I mean, yes and no. I have mixed feelings about her. Like, specifically the relationship sabotaging. It made me mad at first, but it also, I don't know, kind of relieved me. Like, I wanted I'll say it, this Deus Ex Machina to take... Otoya away from Yuri and, like, stop him from trying to ruin her life, potentially. And I was thankful that he could be redirected somewhere else. And especially, actually, my wife and I have known an individual who we said, oh, this guy really needs some woman to come along and put him in his place. And, like, he could be a good guy if, or, like, a really good guy if, and, I guess happy story. It turns out that maybe, we should have had a little more faith in, somebody who he was close to because, they ended up kind of, I'm pretty sure it sure seems like she ended up kind of rising to the challenge and, you know, making things even. And that's really, really like beautiful to see in real life. And it's just kind of fun to watch in fiction.
Yeah. I think my favorite moment so far between Otoya and Maya is when he says, "How lucky for me, I've never met a woman who truly understood art until now," and she says, "How sad, that means you've never met a woman who truly understands you," and he looks horrified.
Yeah.
Because for one second
that was good, wasn't it?
She's made him face the fact that he's not after Yuri in the way that he's telling her that he is.
She's seen through his BS as well.
Yeah,
it makes me so mad.
He has to face the truth.
There are no interactions of that level in game. It drives me nuts that the current series does not even have these kind of interactions, which I would consider these should be par for the course.
Yeah.
Because that the moment when an arrogant character's facade crumbles away, I mean, that's a necessity, isn't it? Especially in a children's program. Set up somebody who believes they're immortal, the chosen one, and then show another character cut through it with just a single word. A character who's naive as well.
Someone who believes they are a good person.
Oh, yeah.
Being shown that actually they just have the potential to be a good person, but they are choosing not to be. They're willfully ignoring.
Otoya doesn't want to be understood. That's the
problem.
Well,
yeah, there's that too.
And I think, you know, what if he does now? What if he's realised, actually, you know, I could be a real person? Maybe that's what attracts him to Maya. I don't really remember if it's ever really elucidated on.
Huh. Wow. This is, This is good stuff, man.
when I was talking with Sono and Jules, which I haven't edited yet. I half have, actually.
You
that
have.
Was untrue. I have mostly done it. But no, we were talking about Maya and Otoya, and they were of the opinion that Maya was sort of vampire queening him, like enchanting him with her magical glamours to affect the relationship between him and Yurian and him and her. Mm. And I disagree. I don't think that is the case. I think that
I think that's a poetic
to me, it seems very natural, obvious and human that he would react to this woman in this way.
Do
either of you see, like, did it occur to either of you that it could be a magic love thing?
No, it occurred to me that, like, subconsciously, that obviously that's the impression they're giving on one level with the directing. Like, in, you know, the camera is saying, look at the magic of this mystical vampire woman. But no, in a genuine sense, I think the story is just telling me that Otoya has finally met a woman he can't really compete with. It's not, I don't think it's magic. I think that's a liberal interpretation of it. I think that a show like Kamen Rider would be a lot more explicit if it was.
Yeah.
I think we'd see her eyes glow.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I love Kamen Rider, but it's not a complex. It's never been a complex thing. And I don't think... No, I think we'd have seen her eyes glow if that was what they were going for.
I think he was stricken by her beauty more than anything. Although, there is... how do I put this?
Gently.
I have heard a story of a young man who was inexplicably overcome by a strange cocktail of both wholesome and animalistic desire and longing, not lust, I would say.
Strike you as asking for a friend.
No. Of course not. Come on. It's totally different.
I had this friend,
and it was completely inexplicable to this young man. And
whoever he may be,
he may be, exactly.
Go on.
And it was something that just kind of happened at random in a moment, and who knows what would have happened had it been pursued, but it wasn't, and like everything, the world returned to normal, but for a few short moments, this one day. With this one person, there happened to be a strange conflagration that is completely unexplainable, and maybe that's what happened with Otoya.
Of course, and that wasn't literally magic, presumably. I mean, if this person was here, I would ask them, presumably you didn't actually believe that was magic. Because, I mean, I think the audience could do a show a disservice, really, by sort of assuming it's magic rather than natural chemistry between two living beings. I mean, I'd rather assume it was the latter. Yeah,
I think that's a lot stronger and a lot more human and realistic, because sometimes those things just happen.
An everyday compatibility, I think. Because, I mean, the first time that Otoya saw her, they didn't really interact. He was just immediately struck. But every time after that, it's been much more of an interaction.
And they're both
thing.
Inconsistent jerks. They're both hypocrites. They're perfect for each other.
Yeah.
And they both don't actually understand what they have the potential to be. Maya goes on about how curious she finds human and how fascinated she's by love. She's still murdering fangires left and right for falling in love.
Mm.
So, they're perfect for each other. Why not?
Yeah, why not?
It's unbelievable.
All right, moving on from there. Episodes 27 and 28, more or less, Shizuka asks why, or not asks why. She declares herself, basically, that she isn't Wataru's friend, which I found quite strange, because she was, like, seeking for him to have a real friend.
Well, yeah, I mean, you said, why doesn't Shizuka count as a friend of his? And, well, she's his mother, isn't she?
Yeah.
She introduces herself as such twice, so I think it was actually really charming when she's like, you had a friend once? I thought that was really funny. For a girl younger than, she's meant to be, what, like 4 or 5 years younger than him, and
that
just
seems
so patronizing,
yeah.
Or matronizing, for her to go, what, you? You had a friend before Kenga? Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was funny.
More to the point, I don't remember, that's the funny thing. First time around watching this show, I don't remember this coming out of left field so hard, but this time I was like, what? We're here already? Tiger? Already? Really? How did you feel about this, Matt, about Wataru having a childhood friend?
Good, but, I was happy to watch it, because, like, you know, he got to this place in his teens or his, you know, early 20s where he's, you know, a recluse and just obsessed with recreating the Bloody Rose and, you know.
What went wrong?
Yeah, exactly. What went wrong? And it kind of worries me, now that I'm thinking about it to really see, what happened exactly.
Flashback makes it clear that Tiger is the much more dominant one in the relationship.
Yeah, and I wonder why. I just don't see right now where that's going, especially, except for this, because it's a show and it's a work of fiction and it's Kamen Rider, there are certain things that are kind of predictable about it. And Taiga's glove made me wonder if he was a Fangire and part of the Checkmate 4, specifically because they have tattoos appear on their hands.
You and your theories.
I know.
I suppose there were mouths in the trees as well.
No, he was wearing a glove. Why would you wear a glove?
A glove. He's a Michael Jackson fan. It was the 80s.
I did think of that, honestly.
It wasn't by then.
I just dismissed it.
Oh, no, it wasn't, was it? It was the 90s. Well, he was a latter-day, like, blood on the dance floor. There's nothing wrong with that. It's all right.
History.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, history, exactly.
But anyway, as there always seems to be a Checkmate 4, and I assume it's a lifetime membership deal, kind of like the Slayer, like it just passes on when somebody dies. So, anyway.
Do you have speculation as to his rank? Actually, you won't by now, will you?
Yeah, no. I mean, the only thing I can... Like, somebody's got to be the king. And I have this weird sneaking suspicion that somehow, even though it doesn't make sense, Otoya is somehow supposed to be the king. And he isn't, or he's hiding it, or he's cast off his Fangirehood, or something weird like that has happened. And it's just driving me nuts not knowing. So
It's a surprise when it was revealed. I was surprised as well. I'll just say that.
Okay.
Many surprises.
Yeah, the 80s, the king of the 80s. Yeah, it's a surprise. It's weird. It'd be interesting to discuss it. It'll be interesting. I'm going to remember.
Wait,
that
so it's Michael Jackson.
What's that, Matt?
So it is Michael Jackson.
Yeah, exactly. King of the, king of pop. We've been over that, though, previous episode. Do go on to speculate about familial ties and
destiny. Yeah, of course, as I always do. It seems to me like Maya is Wataru's mother, and he has a brother who hasn't been around for some time now.
At this point in the notes, I simply wrote, Monocle falls out. Absolutely preposterous theory, Matt. I don't know where you get this stuff from.
A naked brother.
Yeah,
a naked brother. Yeah.
It kind of made me happy. I usually object to people having their babies being naked all over the place, but I thought it was quite cute. Maybe it was just because I'd recently had, I have a 3-month-old, so maybe I'm just used to that right now.
Well, the funny Japan actually is, Japan is famous for its sexualization, but it's also like completely, it sees like a baby's nudity as something just natural, because it's obviously not supposed to be perverse. So it's interesting.
I found the naked baby very regal.
It was, wasn't
like
it?
Yeah. Because he was on a throne and stuff.
Yeah.
The way
that
Maya just comes in and picks him up. But she has a very... She's so self-possessed that she... I don't know, it seemed very...
It seemed very proper. It seemed very right, didn't it? Yeah.
It was really cool.
It really made you wonder who that baby grows up to be.
If she's
in the long run.
If she's the queen and it's her son, then he has to be destined for the throne. But if she has... Well, anyway, if Wataru is also her kid, what does that mean?
What does it mean?
It
means we've got two princes.
I guess so.
Two rival princes. Does this sound
a little
like
bit
any writer show?
A little bit, and I love it. No, I can't wait.
He must have picked a prince.
No, I'm there already, okay. Claire. I totally feel like Taiga's going to come back, and possibly we'll get some flashback of, oh, we used to play together, but now we're fighting because there's only one who can be on the throne, and I don't know. Wataru, like, will have to not let... I don't know. I don't know where it's going, but they've got to be brothers and princes. Taiga is his brother, his secret Fengar brother, and just
I just want to call back. I just want to call back to the fact that I said... Do you remember when I went, oh, some time ago?
Yeah,
because we mentioned what a fan you were of Black. And I just, oh, just wait and see. And I'm glad we're getting to that point. I'm not saying too much, come on.
No, this
I'm not saying too much.
This
it's
makes me happier.
Different to Black.
This makes me happier. And I'm sorry.
There are fans, I've seen people say that it's a ripoff of Black. And I think, what show are you watching? It's completely different, honestly. I think there's a lot of it in there that you'll like, but it... Yeah, it's different.
I mean, it's already way different in the fact that, they were always destined to it, and Nobuhiko and Kotaro were kind of, like, roped into it as part of some crazy deal, and it's just, like, in its nature, it's totally different. And I gotta say, I'm jumping ahead to 29 and 30, but the introduction of this, what was he, like, an aardvark, the cowboy? Isn't that Bando?
Oh, the cat. Abel, who has, by the way, the weirdest name I've ever seen. He's the Warthog Fangar.
Warthog, that's right.
Yeah, okay. Someone who flipping understands Japanese better than me, get in touch with me about this. His name is written in kanji, I think, and it literally says, it's spelled out in hiragana as Aberu. Now, I would assume with the hiragana, Abel, because that's like a cool sort of Western sounding name, and he's Western coded.
Right.
But it's written with kanji. And the weirdest thing is, the kanji translate to a bell. And it's like a bell as in a thing you ring. It's the strangest name I've ever seen. I don't know what to call him.
Hmm.
His name is Abel and Aberu, and it's, I don't know.
A bell ringing for high noon?
I have no idea. Boggles my mind, but that's a linguist thing that I got fascinated with back when we first watched
it. It's very strange. Does he die? I can't remember, because I automatically felt after he came along, like, I was in fear for Taiga.
I don't remember.
Like, I wondered for a second, and of course this is jumping ahead to 29 and 30, I wondered if he was Taiga, but then he clearly wasn't. But then I started thinking, like, well, if there's some guy gunning for the king, that means that Wataru is potentially going to be in danger, and so is Taiga, and it'll be interesting to see if Wataru ends up protecting Taiga at some point from a Fengar.
I just want to do this, just to set you up, right? Taiga hasn't been introduced by that point, but... You will be surprised when you see him, because the actor, you will be surprised by the actor that is playing him. I'll say that. No, it's not Wataru's actor. But yeah, you might be confused even, but yeah, we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. Interesting choice by Toei, I'll put it that way, for what they did here. It confused the hell out of me.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll just mention a little storytelling thing.
Okay. Ooh, please.
Because I mentioned it a little bit earlier, but during this doublet that we were just discussing with... Well, there's really no other...
Pair of wings, no, I don't know. Two-parter.
Well, whichever it is.
Okay.
27 and 28, I think it is. In the first one of the two, we see 2008 Jiro mentioning a promise... to that human, and that's why he helps Nago go back in time. And then in the second one, he mentions that they made a promise to Otoya. But at the point we are in the show, in 1986, Jiro is gone after doing his awful kidnap. We don't know how he comes to return, but he clearly does come to return because he's there in 2008 having made a promise to Otoya.
It's timed really well.
How did he come to make an honor bond with Otoya after doing such a bad thing? We don't know, but now we know there is a story there, and we know that Jiro will come back, and we know that something will happen between him and Otoya. And it's just such well-tuned storytelling to keep the tension high. Because it could have just dropped off for Jiro completely.
Well, like I said,
thinking, oh, he's still in there. Is it a punishment? Who knows?
But I was worried about
a new element has been introduced to why they are actually there and what they do. And it just, everything just keeps going, and it's not like, oh, finally we find out that annoying thing that we didn't know. It's, oh, now there's something new to reinvigorate this old...
Just as Tatslot comes in to steal their jobs. So, yeah, it's very well timed.
That's funny. It's funny that you frame it that way. But no, that's, you're right, Claire. Thank you for pointing that out. It is kind of a brilliant piece of storytelling, because it accomplishes all those things in one stroke, basically. Mm. Alrighty, moving on from the wonderful words of Claire to my lame notes. Naga's infatuation with Maya and humbling at the boxing glove of Otoya is weird and neat. It's so ridiculous. That made me think of Lupin the Third, as I'm not sure it was supposed to, but it did. Anyway, I'm glad to see that he is changing, but the details of the circumstances that brought that about are totally out of left field. I would not have believed this is how it happened if someone had told me.
Is that because of the time travel, or is it because of other details?
It's a combination of the time travel and, like, him kind of being similarly taken by Maya.
I kind of just let the time travel go, to be honest.
I didn't want to at first.
I don't have the energy to debate whether or not it should be there. I have enough goodwill for Kiva that I will just let it be.
I justified it by acknowledging that the arms monsters are in there, looking the same all the time, so it's a space outside of regular time, so why the hell not? You know, if you take a Buddhist view, if no time passes there, then all time passes there.
Yeah.
So why the heck not? But, I mean, with regards to Naga's face turn, if I can just quickly lay mine out.
All right.
Well, yeah, it's just quick, but I believe, I think I found it quite believable, because Naga's face turn started when he failed to get that last button, and Kengo declared himself his pupil, because Naga finally started getting the respect he felt he deserved. And
even if he doesn't acknowledge it.
No, but it will gradually turn him... When we see him fail at things, it makes him a much more sympathetic character, I think.
Were you going to say something?
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, what respect that he deserves? Like, very little? Or a modicum?
He thinks he deserves a lot.
Yeah.
And Kengo's giving him respect.
Yeah, Kengo treats him like an idol, and Naga feels like he is an idol.
And that's annoyingly, that's making him a better person.
Yeah.
But about...
Go ahead, Claire.
Go ahead.
No. I was just going to say, like, thing. I see what you're saying, but I don't connect, like, it doesn't feel right to me. Like, I suppose I can concede that you have properly identified the mechanics of his face turn, but I just disagree. Like, that's...
Yeah.
To me, like, I refuse to read it that way because, you know, myself, because it just doesn't feel like the right path. But go ahead, Claire, say what you're going to say.
Well, it puzzled me for a while, too, why he would react so strongly to Maya, because the chemistry did not seem natural to me, thinking about him as a person and her as a person. But on this rewatch... the first time he sees her in a painting 20 years later. Mm. And I don't know if... I know one other Kamen Rider fan who knows the film Somewhere in Time, but anyone else who doesn't, look up that film because it's really good. But that film is about a man who sees a photograph of a woman and falls so much in love with it that he goes back in time to find her and fall in love with her. There's more to it, but it's really lovely. It's a really nice film, and it reminded me of this because partly just because of the time travel and the love and so forth, but there's also the fact that if you see someone in a painting or as a photograph or in a video or in a film or on the television, they don't have the same framing, like, literally, as they would in real life. They're not a person. They're more of an idol. They're a literal object. She's a literal object in a painting. She's not a real person. And then when you see that spring to life in front of you and you've time-traveled, that's probably going to have a pretty startling effect on you. That would probably easily manifest as infatuation. I didn't take it for, like, genuine, real love that you could build a lifetime on or whatever, but that kind of thing is very much a hump to get over in the classic self-actualization journey. Like, getting over the idea of someone being an image, a beautiful image, finding out, actually, they're not all that. Maybe they're a fangirl or something, but it's not really what you want, so you move on, even though it was very affecting at the time. Secondly, she's undeniably more innately powerful than him, and she also has more natural authority, which I think probably makes it easier for him to accept the humbling of attraction, because he never admits anything. So he's not going to admit that he has a crush on someone, that he likes a girl. But if she's more important than him, then he can admit that he admires her.
Mm-hmm.
It gives him an out. Like, well, of course I thought that she was very marvellous and beautiful because she was a powerful and authoritative queen.
Yeah.
And third, Otoya told him in so many words that falling in love would make him stronger. And he does want to be stronger. He rejected it at the time, but that doesn't mean that the idea didn't penetrate, because he's not a very good person. He's not good at being a person, and he basically just follows any strong rule that he thinks will help him be more powerful. And when he goes back to 2008, he says, "This is my playful heart," or whatever it is. He actively calls back to Otoya's advice, even if he's not really acknowledging it seriously.
His serious voice, though.
And it's not sincere.
But he clearly had connected with the advice on some level. Like, he may not acknowledge that he actually took it.
Well, I like the
but
idea.
But he did actually take
it. I like the idea that Otoya told him, "This will make you stronger," and that immediately, you know, strikes a chord with him, and he basically then equates love with strength. So when he meets someone strong and makes him feel strong, I'm in love with them then. He doesn't know what it means, but yeah, my first love, that's it. Mm-hmm. He doesn't know what it means. Because I had a real hard time buying that Nairo had suddenly fallen for this woman, especially with the hints not two episodes before about him and Megumi.
Mm.
But, yeah, I found that a bit hard to swallow, a bit annoying, but...
But I also think that her manner... Yeah. Helped him, because, like I said, she requires high-level honesty from people she interacts with. And then when he's sitting down and denying that he has any positive feelings towards her, she crouches down, and she's like, she treats him like a bunny, basically.
Yeah.
She puts her hand out for the button, first she says, "Are you in love with me? You can tell me." And he's like, "No,
I do not
so
love."
She leaves. She goes to leave, and it's like, fine, all right, bye then. And that's very straightforward.
Yeah,
and Nago is... he has the manner of someone who really can only react to literality.
He likes to think he's straightforward as well. And I think, she's maybe the only character thus far he's truly respected in some way. Because she's treat him as badly as he treats other people. Again, Maya's very useful for these terrible men.
Because she doesn't allow anybody else to suggest that she puts on airs.
Yeah.
Like, he can tell Megumi that she's silly or useless or frivolous or... I forget what word he used, but he was essentially saying slutty.
Sinful? Didn't he say that?
Yeah. And she will be affronted. Because, you know, she's a normal person who understands when she's being disrespected.
Yeah.
But Maya is a level above, and she just won't acknowledge that he said it because it's obviously not true. So he has to be honest, which pushes him to be more honest.
Hmm.
So I don't think they're a love match, but I think she was probably good for him, even if... Like, if he had a crush, or if he didn't have a crush, or if he just respected a girl, and Otoya was like, "Oh, obviously, fancy her, lol." Because that's the kind of foolish person that Otoya is. There was some sort of connection made.
Mm.
Yeah. And I guess getting back to Otoya, it's kind of funny that I'm... Todd suggested this earlier, that I'm... starting to like Nago more and more at the same time I'm getting really fed up with Otoya and his shenanigans. But it's kind of interesting to hear everything you said, Claire, and to think about how Mai is good for improving both of these guys to some extent, or causing deep change in them. Because her interaction with him is that she is providing this, I don't know, escape or target or temptation or whatever for him while he's, you know, living with Yuri. And it all seems very muddled and confusing because now the lines of parentage are getting all cross, and I'm like a, I don't know, I'm like, I'm upset with Otoya, but at the same time I'm just curious from, you know, a story perspective, just to see like who's he end up marrying, I would say. Yeah.
For elucidation, in his notes, Matt put, it seems he must end up marrying Maya, because presumably you meant because Wataru is obviously their child.
Yeah.
And I just put your assumption that he marries her is darling.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
No, but I mean it, because I mean it is funny how it...
Because your philosophy is hit it and quit it, right, Todd?
Well, exactly. We all know this. It's just taken me 10 years.
I've got a chain.
Exactly. Yeah, and, you know, I think it's natural to think that way. Who does he end up with? And it's weird that it maybe doesn't occur to you, neither. You know?
Yeah, which is so bizarre. And then, like, I don't know.
We're buying into the cliches, but...
Where does that lead, though, you know? Is it...
But read this line of yours so I can read my reply.
Oh, yes, here we go. Yes, I don't want Yuri with either of these guys, but given the whole kidnapping and forced...
The one above that.
Oh, hey, now.
Sorry.
I read that one already.
You didn't.
He paraphrased it.
Yes,
he paraphrased it, but not in a way that would allow my response as written to, you know, naturally come in.
Come, listener. Yes.
We're
behind the curtain.
To make this seem organic.
Behind the curtain of the podcast and see the secrets.
I am so disappointed in Otoya. He is living with Yuri, but he's flirting with Maya, who it sure seems he ends up marrying. What is going on?
Well... Why does Jiro have fur on his jacket? Because he's a wolf in man's clothing.
Oh.
Why does Otoya have fur on his violin case? Because he also is, just less literally.
Oh.
I genuinely think that is... Because it's puzzled me.
Yeah, no, it is.
Because it doesn't
strange,
seem
it?
Aesthetically...
No, it's stupid.
...natural
if you have,
for him to have fur on his case.
It
or for two characters
yeah,
to
exactly.
have fur on
it. It does make it confusing.
But if it means something, and it does, because he is
what you'll notice,
that kind
though,
of chump.
Jiro wears it on his clothes, Otoya wears it on like an object that he carries. Doesn't it look more like a trophy?
Yeah. You could say Jiro wears it on his sleeve.
Yeah.
Almost he does.
Yeah. For Jiro, it's like a mark of what he is, whereas Otoya seems to be carrying it around as if saying, I can kill monsters. I can slay dragons, metaphorical or not.
Yeah. I can get ladies.
Pretty much.
I was.
He's just not a very good person.
No, he isn't. I thought you were just gonna leave off the ease part of that. I can get. anyway, yeah, that's a really good. It's a really good point and parallel, and that's very literary, and that's cool to see.
Thank you for enabling me.
Thank you for pushing away. All right, so next note, which is totally organic now. I don't want Yuri with either of these guys, but given the whole kidnapping and forced cohabitation and motherhood, I guess Otoya is a better choice. But he is too desirous and wandering. I have heard tell of married men who avert their eyes from and deny the beauty of other women in an effort to always remain faithful to their spouses in their hearts and in fact. And that's definitely not him, so...
Well, I've been saying all along, neither of them's right for her. And it's a nice quashing of, obviously she has to choose one, cliche.
Yeah. I've said a lot about that already.
Yes. You hate him.
I don't hate him. I just think that he is weak and lazy.
Well, I was going to say he's a classic heel because you want to see this happening, don't you?
I do want to see him be an example of what not to do and how not to act.
Yeah, sure. There you go.
So
he fulfills his role as a bad guy rather than just being an annoying ass.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
But I certainly don't like people
no.
to act like him.
No.
Please don't.
No. We can't even say that people should act like Jiro now.
Public people.
That's the sad thing.
Yeah.
Act like pre-episode 23 Jiro.
Well, it wouldn't really work for them anyway, probably, would it?
That's a bit harsh.
Well,
do you not think our listeners are cool?
I don't know, but I think they're probably not, officially beautiful.
Oh my god, edit this out.
No, that sounded awful. No, I don't mean they're all
no,
ugly.
It has to stay.
I just mean there are only certain people who are, beautiful in the beautiful face.
Yeah, no, he is undeniably a gorgeous
man. If they're all gorgeous, then good. Well done.
I'll just go and get a ladder so you can get out of that hole.
Yeah, but how many people can that honestly be said of?
I don't know that they're
Jiro levels of gorgeous. No, like what percentage of the population?
I have no idea because I mean,
I think it's very very small.
It's charisma though. That's the thing, and he's we've already discussed the idea of self-possession. That's the important quality. And
but you do need both.
If you're saying a lot of people aren't very self-possessed,
I don't mean like you just need both.
Okay,
but
okay,
if you're
okay.
gonna be that guy,
stop digging.
You have to already be that guy.
Yeah, but I will agree. 90% of the people I know in my life are not very self-possessed. A small number of them actually are aware of that, whether subconsciously or otherwise. But yeah, I think Jiro is probably a better role model overall. But the best role model of all is whatever we tell you it is.
Yuri.
Well, I'm gonna. Yeah, Yuri's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Probably. I'm gonna. No, never mind. I'm not. I actively choose to not do this, so I shall not.
Hiding things from us.
I'm actually controlling myself, so. This is a good thing.
Well done.
Yeah. Okay, good.
Unfortunately, I think that's where our conversation is going to have to end, unless either of you has something else to add to this bit, because I'm out of time, unfortunately, to discuss the movie.
Oh.
Sorry.
Well, I guess I can just squeeze in, my favorite scene is when Megumi is crying.
Yeah.
Because I thought that was... we don't really see in the series... We see her competent sadness about having lost her mother.
Yeah.
But we don't see her as a child who has lost her mother.
I hope it wasn't just a scene for the director's cut, because it was very brief, but I think it was powerful in its brevity.
She vocalizes. There's a bit of a sob in there. Not a big, dramatic, melodramatic sob, but it's real. If you've been really, truly emotionally sad, you have cried like that.
I think we should cover the movie at the start of the next episode.
Okay.
Because I have plenty to say about it. But yes, agreed. Megumi and Yuri both get much needed screen time.
I might have to rewatch then, if we're going to discuss it at the beginning of the next, which I think would be good.
Yeah. Okay, sure.
I've just seen your last note.
Uh-huh.
Well, not CG. Exposed butt.
And perv out.
Perv out.
What are you planning?
It's a camera technique. No, the perv out. It's where you... It's a wife. It's a certain kind of wife.
Well, tune in next week, listeners, because apparently it's going to be amazing.
Yeah.
Apparently.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well. I quite like the movie, but one line of Matt's notes just says bad. With no punctuation. And capital B.
It doesn't need any punctuation. It stands on its own.
Yeah, I quite enjoyed the movie, and I will have probably an especially traditionally nerdy discussion about it, because I normally like to try and bring in all my sort of writing and media background whenever I can. But with the movie, I just have a lot of questions about how the world of Kiva works, so I'm looking forward to some speculation.
Especially the correctional infrastructure, right?
And why, if your organization is called Worldwide Wing Organization, you would shorten that to something longer than just 3WA. That's some high concept acronyms right there.
Yeah, I guess so. That's pretty funny.
A.com.
Yes, we believe us, you will benefit from us taking time, and it'll be a better listening experience for this. So, sorry to disappoint if you were itching to hear it. I'll try to delete out the thing in the beginning where I say we're going to discuss the movie, because we're not.
But we did, like a bunch.
Yeah, a tiny bit.
We brought it in a little, but I think we should devote some time to Ray and 3AA and ARC and... All of the Needless Imagine cameos. Mmm, they were fun.
I guess you'll have to point those out to me. See, this will be great.
Really?
It'll be even better. Okay. It'll be even better.
I envy you for not noticing them. Okay.
Alrighty. Well, yeah. Yes, everybody envy
Good
me
night.
Because I am.
Good luck.
I am. Never mind. I am Nago! Goodbye, everybody. We'll catch you next time. And we hope you enjoyed this. And leave us comments, please. And emails. Email us and we will air your grievances or your flagellating praise. Sorry. Okay.
Okay.
We can stop
we
recording.
Just need validation.
I don't know what just happened. I do need validation.
If you experience any complications, would like to make a testimonial, or have any questions, send your correspondence to uncommoncastrx@gmail.com or contact the Uncommon Crew via Twitter at GomusQ, at Grimhelm, at Lewis Clay, at CommonWriterPez, at Musard, at Professor Ware. Keep an eye on at UncommonRx, where one can receive updates, deliver input, and give feedback. Also, visit uncommonrx.tumblr.com for additional content.